Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
For multiple bonus shows per week and access to our full podcast archive featuring in-depth interviews, movie commentaries and live shows, please check out the Steel Wars Patreon podcast feed. The Content Club level is just $3 a month and is chock full of Star Wars fun and really helps the ongoing production of the show. All the bonus shows download into your podcast app like any other show. Give a month a try at patreon.com/Steel Wars. Link is in this episode's show notes. And if you do, hit us up for a question for the weekly Patreon Q&A. And now on with the show. I really hope you enjoy it. While Star Wars fans the world over dream of one day visiting Disney's Galaxy's Edge, Entertainment Weekly's Anthony Breznican has already been there. The Brez returns to the podcast to not only go over the details he learned about the park, but also tell us about the actual experience he had on the day.
And we were walking through mud and mounds of dirt, and there were tractors rolling around, swinging their, there were loaders, forklifts and things, swinging their payloads around, and you actually had to be careful. We had to signal for a couple things, machines to stop so we could walk by, like, oh, yeah. Damn, we are actually in a construction zone. This isn't just like, oh, it's all finished, but you got to wear a hard hat. No, I'm wearing a hard hat because somebody three stories up might accidentally drop a screwdriver off of this spire. it was actually pretty gnarly. And, the most finished thing I saw was the interior of the Millennium Falcon ride, the line going inside to the flight deck and all that. That was, for the most part, done being built. They had cardboard down the carpet because that's the final carpet. They don't want work boots tromping it up, but the most of it outside was pretty raw. And I was like, oh my God, they're not going to be done time for the start of summer. And then, of course, 2 weeks later, they say, we're opening, was it May 31st?
This is Steel Wars episode 201, Anthony Breznican reporting back from Galaxy's Edge. Hey guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I am comedian Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars. And each week we talk to someone of interest about it. And this week I'm overjoyed that we are reunited with one of our favorite guests. It is from Entertainment Weekly, the Brez himself, Anthony Breznican. How are you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing great, man. I just got back from Galaxy's Edge. Which I think has something to do with why you want to talk to me.
That is. Well, I don't think you just got back. I want to have full disclosure because people will be very angry with me that I recorded this episode with you 3 weeks ago and didn't put it up. So you're a couple of weeks, but is that all you're thinking about now? Is that how impactful Galaxy's Edge was that you're just in a permanent state of just got back?
Steel, once you've been to Galaxy's Edge,
oh, here we go.
You never really leave.
So, are you saying
it's like the Overlook Hotel
that as we speak down in Anaheim in this 14 acre theme park land, there is a piece of Anthony Breznican somewhere?
No, I'm saying you take it with it, never leaves you. You're just, it haunts you. It's okay. A part of you from that point forward. You're a part of the Star Wars story.
Excellent. Oh my God, this is some hard sizzle, Anthony. All right, I'm sure by now people have, you had a 37 part article on Entertainment Weekly, and we always, I've complimented you on this many times. You always go above and beyond with the information that you're given and milk it, and I mean that in a good way, not in a
I milk it like a thalassiren.
Yeah, yeah. It's just green Breznican milk all over my screen. It's
it's good. That's good milk.
I'm just wiping my mouth now. So people, I'm sure, checked out the EW articles about all that. But I sort of want to go more into the Breznican experience of going. And let's go back to day one. And when did you get the call? Like, how did you find out that this trip was going down?
I've been talking with the Disney Parks people for a while. You know, a few months back, I did a reveal of John Williams doing the music that you'll hear in Galaxy's Edge, and we had a couple of video clips. It was kind of funny because they brought a handful of reporters along for this, and they were showing them video clips that they'd created of, you know, the start of the Millennium Falcon ride and some footage from within Rise of the Resistance. And I was like, well, you know, seen these, we premiered these at Entertainment Weekly. So that was kind of neat. But so I've been in kind of constant contact with the Disney Parks people. But I would say maybe about 2 months ago, they were reaching out to see if I wanted to be part of this tour they were doing. And, you know, to be honest, still, a lot of times it's when you write about these things, you're thinking, like, well, what can I do for exclusivity? You know, what makes people want to go to Entertainment Weekly as opposed to reading the same story somewhere else, you know? And so I don't always want to be part of a group. But if a group's going somewhere, it's better to be a part of that group than not, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
so, you know, I figured we'll take a roll of the dice. And I understand why this is such a big, expansive sort of the explanation or showcase that they would want to, you know, not just do it for one person, but bring a number of different people along. And there were people who were interested in things from a technology standpoint, you know, writers who were there and they weren't less interested in the Star Wars mythology and more interested in the tech that went into the animatronics with the actual design of the land, the tools they used to design it and create it. Some people were more interested in it coming from a amusement parks perspective. There were quite a few amusement park journalists there who their whole thing is covering rides and food and theme parks, and Star Wars is just a part of that, you know? So we, and then there were people like Jermaine Lucier and Amy Ratcliffe and Clayton Sandell who are hardcore Star Wars nuts. And, you know, we're all looking at asking, you know, similar questions. But then the challenge is in writing it up in a way that does make people say, well, I want to read this version of the story, you know. And those other guys and girls did some pieces that made me go, oh, that's an interesting perspective. I wish I'd thought of that, or just happy to read that. But we all try and do our own take, and thankfully there's room enough at the table for everybody.
Jermaine's article about it was very interesting because it mainly focused on how annoying it was that during the video presentation, the guy next to him kept saying, I premiered that on my website.
Yeah. I've seen it. It was on my website. I wonder who that guy was. Bet you he was devilishly handsome.
I've actually, people come to me with their Anthony Breznican questions. And I'm some sort of like, I feel like I'm Commissioner Gordon, that I can summon the Breznican when I put up the Breznican symbol. So people come to, but you're getting a lot of compliments on that hair. It's a pretty slick looking Breznican in that video clip.
Cool. Well, I paid good money for that hair. Have it glued to my head each morning. So I'm really relieved to hear that.
All right, well.
God, did that sound terrible when I was like boasting about having those videos first?
No,
we got to edit that out.
No, this is just.
I can't sound like an arrogant ass. Just be a normal ass.
Breznican, you are annoyingly humble. It's upsetting. That's just, you're just again falling for me twisting your words into something that they're not. So I think the audience can work that out. So on the day, what goes on? You get something like a. You drive down there in the Brezmobile, the Mickey Mouse picks you up. What's going on?
Well, I usually pilot the Entertainment Weekly dirigible when I make long distance trips like that. It's not the fastest way to travel, but certainly comfort and a little bit of Art Deco style. It began with a trip to San Francisco. So flew up there and visited the Lucasfilm.
I was going to say, you have to use Google Maps. That is not the way to Disneyland at all.
Took the long way. Anaheim by way of San Francisco. We flew up there and, that was to talk to a lot of the people who were focused on the story, you know? And that was also one of the most interesting things to me is Endeavor occurred to me, or really drove home, I would say, why it's called Galaxy's Edge as opposed to Star Wars Batuu or Star Wars Black Spire Outpost. Like, why don't they call it the name of the place, right?
Batuu, a Star Wars theme park.
Well, whatever, Pandora. I mean, I guess that's a little more mellifluous or what have you. But the reason they don't is because they don't call it Star Wars Tatooine, you know? It's not Star Wars Jakku. Galaxy's Edge is the story that you're a part of. The First Order has come to this place. The Resistance is hiding in the woods outside of town. You got your shops and your creatures there who are merchants and your junk dealer who, or your lightsaber maker who's posing as a junk dealer. And you're a part of this story, you know, this crossroads where both sides are meeting, sort of like Casablanca in World War II, you know, this sort of nexus point between the front lines and the various countries that have a stake in this battle. And that's the thing. That's what you're a part of. That's why it's called Galaxy's Edge. And like that could be the title of a movie or a TV show. And that's what you're a part of. You're there as a participant. You're meant to role play, meant to imagine yourself in this world. And everything from the food to the products is something you could buy in the galaxy. So you can't buy Hasbro action figures there. You can buy dolls that are handmade, sort of like Rey has in her fallen AT-AT shelter. You know, she makes those crude little dolls. Remember the white stormtrooper that Jyn Erso has that she drops?
I have been waiting for those sort of toys to come out desperately. Those toys that you can get from the market stall there look really cool. I'm wondering, though, what's the explanation that this shop on Batuu has got, like, teddy bears of Yoda, a Porg, Rey, Finn, Kylo Ren? Like, are these all famous people in Batuu? What's going on there?
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it. What do we have as our action figures, as our toys? Back in the day, you'd have a G.I. Joe, Barbie, right? I think, what do they call him in Australia? Action Man?
Oh, that's very, very good toy knowledge, Anthony. Right? I'm impressed.
So you have these characters back in the 60s that were, you know, just based on, this is a U.S. Marine. This is a Navy sailor. This is an Air Force captain. So these are heroes of the Resistance, right? Or heroes of the Republic. And, you know, similar, I don't know if, like, did kids after the Revolutionary War have little stuffed George Washingtons? I don't know. Did they have, they had toy soldiers, though, didn't they? So the very concept of a toy soldier is what you're seeing in these toys that they have at Black Spire Outpost.
All right, I'll let it slide. Now, after, you know, obviously you've talked to the story group that, you know, came up with the story and the Imagineers and stuff. And I think when we first heard about a Disney Star Wars land, like, most people went immediately to, like, oh, you got to have a speeder bike ride and an X-Wing thing and a Death Star trench ride, you know, like, to, you can relive the things that you saw in the movies. It's pretty bold that they went with this, like, totally new, like, sort of storytelling device. Are you completely sold that that was the right way to go?
Yeah, I think it's a lot cooler. The question will be how you sustain it over decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Indiana Jones ride is, what, like, something like 25 years old.
25 years young.
Yeah, well, it hasn't changed that much, you know? And maybe they upgrade this or that, or you know, rehab it a little, or add some sort of new device. But the basics of the story that you experience are still the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you build these things, you got to expect we are not going to be changing it for about 30 some years, if then. So given that this takes place at a certain period of time between Last Jedi and Episode 9, and you're just existing as a chapter in that story as a guest, I think it's an interesting device. Better than you walk in, you know, you just buy your Darth Vader sippy cup and you're get on the Dumbo, the Yoda version of the Dumbo ride, you know, where he flies around with big ears. Like, rather than have that, you're getting a different kind of amusement, a chance to play as part of this world. And I was saying on my own radio show that I felt like I didn't feel like I was part of the Star Wars universe. I felt like I was an action figure in this big playset. That's what it felt like to me. Like if you could shrink down and become part of Toy Story, but with your Star Wars action figures, that's how it felt, you know, because you never lose, you know, unless you're, you have some issues to telling the difference between fact and fiction. You're never like, I'm actually in Star Wars. You don't lose yourself in that way. It's more like I'm being a kid and saying, I'm Han Solo. You're Chewbacca. This neighborhood is the Green Moon of Endor. Let's go fight some imaginary stormtroopers. You know, imagination is still a factor in your ability to enjoy Galaxy's Edge, which really is how it should be, right? Like, it just took me back to being a kid, 8 years old. Best friend was Joey Mitchell. Taller than me, stronger than me. His mom made a Chewbacca suit for him for Halloween that was like real fur and it had like a head that kind of fit on some sort of plastic neck would go over his, and he'd zip up and we'd be running around in the summertime in Pittsburgh just like I'd have like a black vest on, probably like my first communion vest or something, and my Han Solo brand Hasbro blaster, or I guess it would have been Kenner blaster back in those days. And then he'd be like sweating. He'd take that head off and just be like he was in a sauna, because it was 1,000 degrees in there. But man, those were the best. Some video game. I wish I could remember the name of it, where it was like the point of view of a starship, and it's just little white dots coming at the screen. You'd warp around and have to battle like a ship every now and then. We pretended like my basement was the Millennium Falcon, and we're flying. We would warp this thing and, you know, do that kind of hyperspace thing where the stars streak out across the screen. And we would pretend that was the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And now you get to do that, and just the tech is better, you know? And as an adult, you're given license to enjoy some make-believe. So I really love that they didn't just go with Star Wars-themed Disneyland.
Yeah, okay.
Instead,
I love the thought of when Joey took his mask off and you as Han Solo said, "Chewie, we're dehydrated."
Yeah, just the sweat pouring out of him like he was in an aquarium or something.
But I'm very I'm enthralled with the thought that you're an action figure, Anthony. I'm going to get on eBay and look for a vinyl caped Bresnikan after this.
Exactly. That's what I want to be.
Now, talk about the actual day that you got to go.
All right, so day one was at Lucasfilm. Day two was actually here in L.A. Where I live. In Glendale, where the Imagineering warehouses and offices are, and they were showing us like the Hondo Onaka animatronic that greets you as part and introduces you to the mission of the Smuggler's Run ride. And then I saw like the Dokundar Ithorian alien, which was really cool, man. I didn't know those things talked out of the sides of their mouth. So I'm learning stuff here, you know?
Has there been any footage of the Ithorian, which I guess the more rudimentary Star Wars fan would know as a hammerhead?
I love that hammerhead has become a slur. Like, that's a slur for the Ithorian. Get those hammerheads out of there. Like,
dude,
you know.
All those Kenner action figures were slurs.
Squid face, snaggletooth.
It's like sand person. It's no good. Walrus man. Greedo.
Well, Greedo was his real name, right?
Was it though? You know, you've been trying to convince me the Brez isn't your real name for years now.
Greedo. I love Greedo.
So you got to see an animatronic Ithorian.
Yeah. Did you know that they don't have like front facing mouths like you and I?
I think
they have like, it's like two mouths on either side of the hammerhead.
What language do they speak?
Some sort of, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Gotcha.
It's a blah, 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 blah kind of language. I don't know. They speak their own native tongue, partly because their mouths are like, it's like two harmonicas taped to your neck. They talk out of the neck, and they have these two mouths that open, and they have these little ridges inside. They're not teeth. They're connected. But that's how they jibber-jabber.
So,
and it's got a real deep low voice and is, you know, 7, 8, 9 feet tall, something like that. Oof. Hard to tell because it's only the top half of it, you know, and it was sitting down on the floor. So he might be taller once he's actually plugged into the shop, but pretty neat, man. It really looked cool.
The Hondo one was like freakish. It was like a nightmare character. Like, it was just weird to see this cartoon character in real life.
Yeah, made to look real. I mean, he looks... I kept like seeing him out of the corner of my eye as our group was doing the tour, and like he's moving and talking, and I'm like, your brain is registering that as a person, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like you keep like, wait, that is, like, just the smoothness of the movements is really remarkable.
So why would they, I'm not sure if you got info on this, go with the animatronic guy instead of just dressing someone up that can be a bit more interactive?
I kind of wondered that, but I didn't really ask. I think it's part of it's the wonder, if I were to guess. It's neat to make it. Also, just to have the guy there doing the same line 1,000 times a day, maybe that causes mental health issues for a human being, you know.
And that voice is pretty hard to do as well, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you got to do the voice. I mean, I guess you could, but in the end, maybe that would be more expensive, hiring somebody to do that and keep it moving and do it again and again and again and again. I do think that would be maddening. It's one thing to do like 3 shows a day, but imagine having to do hundreds. Like,
yeah, I do like the alternate timeline where you went to a warehouse somewhere in California, and there was just like this guy training to say the same line over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just one line; it's like a whole spiel he does to explain like what he's up to, what he needs from you. You know, so yeah, I think it's probably just a little easier to have a robot do that, you know, same as, you know, they have Patrick Warburton doing the introduction to Soarin' Over California. You could have a human do that too, but just, you know, just have this guy do it, do it once.
Get Putty
and
then to
we'll
do
record it.
It.
Yeah. So that's my guess.
All right, what other sweet stuff did you see at that Imagineering warehouse?
DJ Rex, that's the robot from the old Star Tours ride, who is now, he wasn't a very good pilot, so he's become a musician.
No, but that's I like that real world thing because I have so many friends that, you know, they just got over doing whatever they were doing and then decided, I'm becoming a DJ. That is very true to life. So I appreciate
it's a good fallback.
That. Yeah.
Hey, after you crash a ship as a pilot, you're not really going to be trusted anymore. So may as well pursue that rock star dream, you know?
Yeah. And that was, he's getting voiced again by Paul Rubens, yeah? Pee Wee Herman?
I think so, yes. Yeah. They went back to the original voice on 9 Numb for the Rise of the Resistance ride. So. Yeah, anytime they could conjure up the real person to voice it, they did that.
Ah, so there was an animatronic 9 Numb, yeah?
Yes.
How did that look? Because that's something that you've actually seen, you know, in a couple of movies.
Look pretty good. He's piloting a ship, so he's kind of like turning around and talking to you. I don't think he was fully operational, maybe a little bit when we saw him because that ride wasn't up and running 100%.
Anthony, don't you know anything about Star Wars? Never trust anyone when they say something's not fully operational.
Exactly, yeah. In this case, it actually wasn't, because they would open it up and they, all right, everybody get in. All right, and then it rolls around and they would describe what happens. It's like, okay, now get out and walk through the ride. So there were not there were actually people there hammering boards and drilling things and laying pipe, so it actually was not running. I'm pretty sure. I take their word for it. So then we do that. And also at Imagineering, they took us through a lot of the technology they use, like virtual reality to figure out the lay of the land. And that was fine. It probably would have been more interesting if I was writing about tech. Mm-hmm. But it was neat. Neat to see. Neat to see that designers can go, I'm working here at Imagineering. I'm not driving down to Anaheim. I just want to go walk through the park. Let's go into this room where we, you know, conjure up reality and a digital version of it. I'm just going to walk through and then see what it's like if we move this mountain over here. That kind of thing's kind of cool.
And then in 10 years' time, when they're too lazy to go over to the virtual reality machine, they can just do it from home.
Exactly.
Hmm.
So then after that, next day, down in Anaheim, first part of the day is eating the foods and beer.
I need more detail than that, Anthony. I like, you're there, you're a special media guest. Do you just go through the front door? Is there a side door? Is there a tunnel? Are you going past Walt's frozen head? Come on, give me details.
No, we're in a van of sorts, just driving through. You go through like a... looks like a delivery entrance. Looks like an industrial part of town, the backstage area of Disneyland.
Before they put you in the van, did they put like a black hood over you?
No, yeah, like you're going to visit Osama bin Laden or some.
Yeah.
No. It's no. You just drive. They just let you through a gate. There's nothing. There's no. There's no like a fear of you sneaking back. You know what I mean?
All right. Fine.
So we go in, they walk us in through a room, we sit down, they've got the room decked out with the toys and merchandise and foods and drinks sort of arrayed around the perimeter of the room. Look but don't touch kind of situation. And a bunch of tables, and then they had toy designers come in and talk about the concept of the toys being, as we discussed already, representative of what you would find if you were in the galaxy. And same with the food. Food is playing a part. So as you know, if you've read any of the stories, you don't eat chicken. You eat Tip Yip, which is the little flightless bird from Endor who hangs around with the Ewoks.
I love that it's not chicken. It's the space chicken that was played by a chicken in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's Tip Yip.
Tip Yip, which I was like, a weird name. Oh, it's from Endor, so it's Ewok language. So that's why it has that kind of dumb-sounding name. But, then they have Ronto, which is some sort of like a big dinosaur. It was actually one of the creatures that was added to the special edition of the original movie. Jawa's riding that thing through Mos Eisley.
What does CGI food taste like, Anthony?
Well, it tastes like CGI chicken. No, it's a... Ronto is like a barbecued pork, kind of like a roasted pork. I guess it could be a roasted beef too. I don't know, anybody could.
So what are they going to have like in the menu? Is it going to say Ronto then in brackets like it's beef? Because I could just imagine the people working there. It's just like, hey, what's kudu? It's pork, all right? It's pork. Like it's just. Yeah. I think after the third day, people are going to break.
I imagine they'll say, because people have allergies and shit like that, so you've got to probably be upfront about what kind of animal or vegetable you're consuming.
I break out in a rash when I have Minoc. I've got to tell you, Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
It's very embarrassing.
I know. You got to keep that EpiPen handy.
Hey, did you know that the photo of when you saw all the merch, there's a bit of buzz around. There's a t-shirt with Ray on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's... many people in the fandom are predicting that in episode 9, Rey will have a rough saber. Like she would have put the Skywalker saber back together, but because it got broken, it will be like a blue version of Kylo Ren's as far as the blade being jagged. And that the T-shirt on your article, there was intense debate on Twitter if the jaggedness around Rey's saber in that picture is just to denote it's a lightsaber and it's glowing, or it's a spoiler from episode 9.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, you know. I think that's a neat idea. This is the child's shirt that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, Rey's sort of like in a prepared to fight stance, and it's like a one color screen print, like a coloring book sort of outline picture sort of thing.
Yeah, it's got a little I'm looking at it, I called it up now. Got a little fire around it. A little fuzz.
It could be either, I think. I actually think it's just denoting it's a light up saber rather than they've slipped out some episode 9 art.
Yeah, but most lightsabers don't look like that. I don't know. It's not so ragged that you'd be like, oh, though, that's definitely what she's got. But maybe. Mm. I hadn't heard that, but...
I've coined a phrase, Anthony. Mm-hmm. It's called a happenstance spoiler, where something does show something from a future film, but it's just by chance. For instance, there was a car commercial before The Force Awakens came out that showed...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, the girl dressed as Rey had the lightsaber. And I remember before the film came out, people were going, is that a spoiler? Does she get the lightsaber? And I always thought it was just like...
She also uses the Force.
Yeah.
In that...
Do you reckon that was a spoiler, or is that a happenstance spoiler?
I do know that there was a ton of concern about whether they should do that, and they decided, yeah, better to go with it. Because they wanted kids to know that, yeah, Rey is a powerful person in this. So, you know, that commercial was directed by Sean Levy, the guy who did the... Night at Museum films. This Is Where I Leave You. A lot of great comedies. And he directed that. You know, a lot of people don't know, like, film directors in between movies often direct commercials too. And they don't have a credit or anything. And a lot of times they don't necessarily want a credit. You know,
interesting.
They're doing it for the paycheck.
He's also made a lot of great jeans over the years as well.
It's Levy, so that joke does not fly. Sorry. The judges have ruled against that joke. Sorry.
I think even if it was felt the same, that joke would not fly, just quietly.
Yeah.
So,
but I remember him telling me there was a lot of like, oh, are we going to actually do this and show that she has the Force? And they decided to go with it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, we've stumbled upon a little bit of a Star Wars factoid there, Anthony. Mm-hmm. So no one saw that coming, including myself. But that's why you are that's the magic of happenstance spoilers. See, this phrase I've coined is already bringing in the information. I'm very happy. Now, tell me about how you got brought into the land.
So we go into a working area. Like a planning room, like on construction sites, they have these little trailers and things. That's where the, you know, supervisors and the foremen get together and they walk through the morning's plan and they come out.
It's where Tony Soprano's thugs go in to hassle someone about.
Yeah. Exactly. So, we go in there and, you know, we get a little lecture about safety and I'm thinking, oh, come on. How bad is it going to be, you know? And they were all adamant you had to wear boots and you had to wear a hard hat, orange vest. I'm like, okay, we're just going to be walking around this place feeling a little silly, but these are the rules, right? till it's finished being built. Actually, it was mud. It was a lot of loose rock and uneven territory, uneven turf. Like, all of the buildings were constructed. The exteriors were done for the most part, but not maybe finished being dressed, but completed. The insides were still being worked on. Workers were going in and out, you know, like I said, drilling, hammering, putting up walls. And they were laying pavement around the laying stones around the Millennium Falcon. And we were walking through mud and mounds of dirt. And there were tractors rolling around, swinging their, you know, there were loaders, you know, forklifts and things, swinging their payloads around. And you actually had to be careful. We had to signal for a couple things, machines to stop so we could walk by like, oh, yeah, damn, we are actually in a construction zone. This isn't just like, oh, it's all finished, but you got to wear a hard hat. No, I'm wearing a hard hat because somebody three stories up might accidentally drop a screwdriver off of this spire. you know, it was actually pretty gnarly. And the most finished thing I saw was the interior of the Millennium Falcon ride, the line going inside to the flight deck and all that. That was, for the most part, done being built. They had cardboard down the carpet because that's the final carpet. They don't want work boots tromping it up, you know, but the most of it outside was pretty raw. And I was like, oh my God, they're not going to be done time for the start of summer. And then of course, 2 weeks later, they say, we're opening, you know, was it May 31st? So
yeah. Star Wars Celebration is just around the corner, and to celebrate, Steel Wars has three new themed t-shirts. The Jump Mall t-shirt is a special double tribute to Chicago's best-known athlete and Episode 1's best-known Sith apprentice. Just do it. All the new prints are available in limited numbers in long-sleeve and hooded versions. Perfect for that crispy Chicago weather. And if you are going to Chicago, save on shipping and use coupon code MEETUP to get rid of the shipping price, and we can just meet up at the convention and I'll give you the t-shirts there. And whether you're going or not, if you pre-book before April 8th, you will get 10% off your order. The link to the new prints is in this episode's show notes, so even if you just want to check out what new prints are coming out, click that link and let's get on with the show. Have you ever seen, there's a YouTube video on YouTube where all the best YouTube videos are, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it's...
YouTube covered that, huh?
Yeah. It's of Disneyland before it first opened. It's like the last month and it's narrated by, I think, two old Imagineers. And like a week before it was going to open, it was like, there's no way this could open. It's like, it was so... Like, I don't know what they did in those last 3 days, but they made magic, so.
You know what I think it is? I think it's like, have you ever done a puzzle?
I have, actually.
A jigsaw puzzle? Hmm. You're one of those thousand piecers, and you're, like, starting out, and you're like, oh, it takes forever to build up just the edges, right? And then you're, like, doing little sections here and there. You're like, oh, how are we ever going to get this done? And then, like, the more you do, the faster it goes. So those last few, you know... sections like come together really quickly. I think that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, right. And you,
your speed increases exponentially. So,
and you guys weren't allowed to take any photos or have your phones or anything like that, yeah?
We actually had to leave our phones in bags at the bus, the van, because they didn't want to risk that. So no, we didn't take any photos.
Interesting.
Except for photographic memory.
Excellent. Now, what's it like? Like we've seen like the drone footage, we've seen photos, and you know, you say it's pretty under construction, but like to walk the now muddy streets of Batuu, how were you shocked by the immersiveness, or did all the construction sort of wash?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is that out?
Yeah, I mean that... I couldn't say like I felt immersed in Star Wars because it was like walking across some like 2x4s, you know, to get over a pit in the road and a bunch of, you know, workers sitting there eating their lunches saying hey, and, you know, plumbers going into the bathrooms and Tracy Canobio from Lucasfilm going, they're called refreshers in the Star Wars universe, not restrooms, refreshers. Show me the refresher.
Well, I love that. That's pretty immersive.
There's a different word for chicken and a different word for bathroom. It's like, it was in an old Steve Martin joke. He's learning French. He's like, it's like the French have a different word for everything. So, but I did feel, I was impressed that it, the way they built the structures, the mountains and spires and forests and things, is that it really does shut out all the stuff you might see at the edge. Like, you don't see any Ferris wheel from California Adventure. All that's blocked out. They took into account like the human perspective, and you do feel like you're in, it did kind of feel like being on the set of a movie a little bit, except that there was nowhere for the cameras and no backstage, you know?
Maybe did it feel like you weren't next to Disneyland at least?
No, I didn't feel like Disneyland at all.
Okay. The actual size of the land, like 14 acres, it's sort of hard to visualize how big that is.
Yeah, and a lot of it's interior as well, because there's the rise of the resistance goes back inside quite a bit, and there are some pretty big rooms associated with that. And so, yeah, there's...
You've got the A-Wing and the X-Wing, and that's sort of, as far as what I've read from your stuff, you know, their resistance is sort of hiding out in the forest. How far is the forest from, like, the Millennium Falcon?
With no crowd, like, 5-minute walk.
Okay, so about 45-minute walk.
Five. Well, yeah, but with people wiggling around, yeah. No, it's like you walk out and you go through, I think we went walk through the marketplace. You go through the market and then there's like a sitting around area with like a old monument, like a some sort of cenotaph, and then some trees, and probably they'll stick some, like, I don't know. I'm guessing, I don't know if they're going to have some food stuff there or have some characters walking around and some trees and sitting areas and things like that. And then, you know, a lot of the vegetation was not yet in. Again, that's sort of like almost the last thing, because you're going to be you have tractors and machines driving through. So you put that and the paving stones in last. But the, you know, it's not like, oh, there actually is off far in the distance. It's, you know, you got to use your imagination a little bit. It's fairly close.
Now, what did you see of the rides? Which one did you check out first?
The Millennium Falcon, and seeing the Falcon up close is really impressive. That's the detail on that is great, and I really enjoyed seeing that. You know, they go inside, and you see some of the detail, the things that are supposed to enchant you while you're waiting. Little things you could scan with your phone and use the Play Disney Parks app to get some information about the ride and the experience and the world that you're in.
You could scan it with a phone if you're allowed to have one.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought is. I thought for sure we'd be showing up, you know, and like, oh, surprise, it's all ready and you can ride on things. But no, that's not at all what it was like.
So what did you get to go, I guess, into the Millennium Falcon lounge room and the cockpit, or?
Did I what?
Did you get to go into the Millennium Falcon, like the lounge room and the cockpit and stuff?
Yeah, the you know, you go down a little, like, just like getting on an airplane. You go to that little jetway after you get your spiel from the Hondo Onaka animatronic. And they do this cool thing where, you know, you've just walked around the Millennium Falcon. Like, the line takes you behind it, underneath the thrusters. Then you go inside, you see some shipping materials, like, you know, crates and weapons and things like that that Hondo's running. And then you go up a level, and you think there are these little wedge-shaped windows that look out on the satellite dish, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, wow, people are going to be just mobbed around these little windows taking pictures. And then you round a corner, and it's just full bank of picture windows, just clear glass for a couple hundred feet, curving along the side of this mountain. Like, you just get a full eye view of the Millennium Falcon.
A couple hundred feet?
Yeah, I'm not good with distance. Maybe 100 feet. Maybe 100 feet. Maybe more. It was a big, long... I mean, it's a long line. But, like, you're... Yeah. I don't know. What do you have in Australia? Meters?
Yeah, we're into meters, mate. Sounds about 30 meters to me, 100 feet.
Yeah. Let's say 30 meters, whatever those are. We don't have that in America. And you know what? They don't have it in the galaxy far, far away either. So there.
I'm pretty sure they've used
meters. They call it tip-yip.
I'm pretty sure meters has made its way into a Star Wars book. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. So they
use parsecs, I'm afraid.
So when you're looking at that window, you can see the Falcon and then everyone else playing in the park?
Yeah, right? So you see all those people walking around, you get like a view, a little bird's eye view of the park.
See, that compared to other lines in Disneyland, I know the Millennium Falcon's there and, you know, that's very enchanting, but just being able to watch people walk around, like, while I wait is, I like the idea of that. Rather than like at Space Mountain, you're just sort of in this very 70s-esque chain-linked, like, line. Like, being able to watch... Like, look down on people and see what they're doing and stuff. That seems entertaining to me.
It is a little bit like that line, though. You know, you go up and in, and then, you know, sort of a low grade rise, and then zigzag around and inside. Like, I think they have more material there meant to entertain you. But anyway, you know, one of the things I was thinking was, well, where do you, how do they make it seem like you've gone up into the Falcon? Is there going to be like some sort of a port connecting to the Falcon? You know, you're meant to think that you're walking through that. But no, there's nothing engaged with the Falcon like that out in the exterior. But when you're inside talking to Hondo, he's got these windows behind him. You can see the windows from the exterior, but you kind of lose your perspective as you're zigzagging around inside this. Whatever, this hangar. And so you're sitting there watching the animatronic, and behind him are these windows, but they're not actually the windows on the exterior. They're screens, and they don't show the crowd. They just show the sky, some of the rock. Or I actually think they show, like, something like maybe like one of the walls, one of the, you know, cliff sides or something. And you hear this rumbling from behind you. And then you see the Falcon rise up on these screens like it's coming in and landing at some sort of interior port. Then you get in. You take off. You go on your adventure. I mean, and they also, you've probably read, you get to hang out in that chess room where they give you a number, your flight team number 5 or whatever. And then they just call you up. Flight team number 5, you're up. And in the meantime, you have like a certain amount of time where you just wander around the chess room taking pictures and touching stuff. You know, they figured people were going to want to hang out in this room.
Well figured.
Which is a really smart impulse, right? And they figure better to give you a little time there to decompress rather than just have people slowing down the line. So you go in, you go on the ride. As you know, there's like a little choose-your-own-adventure. The ride goes a different way depending on how well the team performs. And then you land, and then you go down through some tunnel. And I suspect it tells you they're moving the Falcon back out front. So by the time you zigzag down through this tunnel, it takes a while to get back outside. The Falcon is parked back outside where you left it. Of course, it never left, but the illusion, the make-believe part of it is It rose up, it landed inside, you took off and landed it back right where it is.
Interesting. Now, how do they, like, how many cockpits are there?
I didn't see on that one, but there they rotate. There's a mechanism inside that'll change out the cockpits.
So, okay, so you always go down the same tunnel, but the cockpit
sort of... You always go down the
of...
same tunnel, but then you get in and it like, you know... Like a six shooter.
Yeah,
like the chamber moves, you know?
Interesting. Okay. And so did you get to go down into the cockpit or?
Yeah, we did go into the cockpit and poke around. And
they lighten it up for you, the screen or anything like that?
The screen was lit up, but it wasn't taken off or they didn't do the ride.
Hmm. All right. And what did you see of the rise of the resistance?
So that one is under... it's way less complete than the Falcon. So we saw the line and sort of set up how you're going through this old Pueblo Indian style structure and temple that's carved into the rock that the resistance has converted into their headquarters. I got to say, Indiana Jones would not be happy with the resistance or the rebellion and the way they hijack ancient sites and just bore through walls and, you know, string their cables and set up their screens. Like, it's not, they're not really preserving the ancient architecture very well. So we went through that, and then, you know, we went through the point where you will see a holograph of BB-8 will project a holograph of Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, telling you something about your mission. Then you go outside, you get aboard Nine Nubs shuttle.
Nice.
And you see Poe Dameron's black and orange X-Wing parked nearby. As you get in, the doors close. Then you see screens on the exterior and Oscar Isaac comes out. You just missed Oscar Isaac, you see.
Oh.
And he's like, all right, I'm going to fly. I'm going to guide you out as we head up into the atmosphere. He'll say something. We didn't actually watch the video. And then you take off. You get captured. And you end up on a First Order Star Destroyer. And then you're still not in a cart. You're still not, like, rolling on a ride. You go in, you know, that the images you see, the concept art of the stormtroopers all lined up in this big hangar bay.
Mm-hmm.
That's real. They really built that. So it's huge. And I think they'll use a little force perspective to make it seem even bigger, meaning the rows of stormtroopers may be a little smaller than your eye may be perceiving them as farther away. And that's part of the illusion. But still, it's a giant room. And big auditorium basketball court kind of gymnasium room, and it's going to have a giant screen. You're going to see space out there. You're going to see the Star Destroyers floating around. Then you're going to get put into an interrogation room. I'm not sure what happens after that, but you get busted out, and that's where the ride begins.
So did you see the like the AT-ATs and stuff?
No, I didn't see those. That part was still under construction.
What do you think of, like, the whole Batuu and Black Spire, and, you know, the resistance are there. It's set between episode 8 and 9. Are we going to get any hints of this place in episode 9, you reckon?
I'll bet you. I don't know for sure, but I would guess something. You know, we see a TIE Echelon, which is a new version of the TIE Fighter. And I would guess that at some point turns up in episode 9. I think Smart Money tells you that.
And you got to see that, yeah?
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, and totally. It's sort of like a shuttle, like a multi-person sort of like TIE Fighter, sort of like Krennic shuttle.
Like a
with
TIE
Darth
Fighter
wings.
With the Kylo Ren's shuttle in the middle.
Yeah, got you.
But like the curved wings of the TIE Advanced X-1 that Darth Vader piloted.
Okay, but it fits a bunch of people.
Yeah, you could take it on a good bachelor party.
Nice. I'd love to go on a bachelor party to Batuu. Yeah, that is very good. So do you think it will play into the story, or do you think it might just be like an Ord Mandel mention?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're probably going to see it flying around, right?
Oh, not so much the TIE fighter, but just that whole, the Black Spire and Batuu. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're going to see it. I mean, they're certainly investing a lot of money in it, so maybe they were like, hey, you give us a shout out, give us a scene. But also maybe not. I don't know how much. I don't think a whole lot of it will be set there in any case.
Yeah. I'd love to see the behind the scenes footage of them telling JJ that, oh, you got to work in this theme park for us.
He might be into that though, you know, like he's, you know, team player and he likes theme parks, so who knows? I doubt, as long as it's organic, you know, it's not like Jesus trying to work, I don't know, Subway sandwiches into a movie. You know?
And one of the things that you had in the merch part was, where is this thing? In the merch section, you've got at Black Spire Outfitters, you can get your Jedi or Sith cloaks and uh-huh. the latest in scavenger wear. Now, as far as I know, you can't cosplay in Disneyland unless it's a special event. Are they going to, like, can you buy this stuff and then you're allowed to wear it around the park?
We got some conflicting information about that. They said they're going to stand by the current rules. So little kids could be in costume, but adults can't. A lot of that is to maintain, just so people don't think that guests work at the park.
Oh, yeah, because that was totally in my head as, like, just sneak in a stormtrooper outfit, get into it, and then do what I want, essentially. Like, just go backstage and do whatever. That would be, I would be into that. But so you can buy a Jedi cloak there, you just can't wear it.
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. I wonder how they're gonna, how do you even police that?
I don't know. I've never seen anybody get busted for that, so, you know.
If you're after bonus Steel Wars episodes and also want to support the podcast in a small financial way, please consider checking out the Steel Wars Patreon feed. For just $3 a month, you get at least one bonus episode a week. But in most cases, like in the past month, you get two, including the From a Certain Point of View, namely mine, News and Opinion Show, the Listener Q&A, and also just dropping is a new hour plus episode of Star Wars Year by Podcast, Horst Burkhart and my Star Wars History Podcast, where we go through the book Star Wars Year by Year. All the bonus content goes directly to your pod app of choice, just like a regular podcast, and downloads immediately. And along with our entire back catalog of episodes and bonus shows, you get the new shows without annoying interruptions in the middle of the show like this one. Ironic. And your hard-earned money goes towards supporting the ongoing production of the Steel Wars podcast. And now is a super good time to sign up, because over Star Wars Celebration, you'll be getting a ton of Steel Wars After Dark Patreon-only blog pods, adding to the full 24-hour attending Celebration experience. I cannot wait. Thank you to all our patrons that support the show. And if you want to check it out yourself, go to patreon.com/Steel Wars. The link is in the show notes. Now, I put it out there on our Patreon. If anyone had a question about Batuu and Galaxy's Edge. So I'll run through these. Michael Nip asks, was there any mention of storylines with live characters playing them out intermingled with the guests, kind of like Westworld?
They may end up doing a little bit of that, but they didn't talk. They didn't show any of that off. And I think that's more a part of the rides. And, you know, all of the people serving the food are kind of playing a part. So, you know.
Well, I had read that the staff was sort of told, this was in your article, I'm sure, that they could come up with their own little backstories about where they are, sort of how they got there in the galaxy and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Most of our other questions actually are about something that they seemingly did not answer. And this is quite telling. And that's about crowd control. Like it sounds amazing. The park sounds great, but I kind of feel like it's too good. And so it'll be like just too hard to enjoy with all the people there sort of thing. To my knowledge, they sort of didn't answer any like crowd control type questions.
No, they didn't. And then later is when they announced the opening dates, it was like, we're going to have reservations for the park, which I think sounds super smart and totally reasonable.
Yeah, but even like the cantina there, it's pretty small there, like the bar, yeah?
What do you mean it's small? You lost me there.
Like the actual, like there's a bar there, like a bar, like a cantina.
Yeah, there's a cantina.
Yeah, but it's not that big from what I've heard.
No, it's not huge, but... No, overcrowding will be a problem, but that's why I think they should stick with the reservations for a while, because you get too many people in there and it's not fun. I'd rather, I don't know if I speak for everybody, I would rather be told you can't come for a few months because we're booked up on reservations, and know that when I do finally get there, I'm going to actually be able to see a droid and not just see 1,000 people crowded around me.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that picture of the publicity photo, the main one they use, or the...
Yeah, that's pretty comical, right? So
and you know, people have photoshopped stuff in. The most comical thing about that, and I counted, there's like 20 people, including the stormtroopers, in the background. And so if someone can take a Millennium Falcon photo once it opens with 20 people in it, I'll give you a reward. I don't know what it is, because I don't really think it's possible. But the most unrealistic thing about that picture is the little girl is dragging the father towards the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, right.
I don't think that's a fair representation of what's going to go down with who's going to drag who. All right, a few more patron questions before we wrap up. John Neswander wants to know, does the park feel sized for a one-day visit, or does it feel like it will take more than one day to do everything? Obviously, line times are a huge factor, but I was initially surprised that there were only two rides. After more thought, I guessed between those ride lines plus a few hours soaking up the atmosphere, we're looking at a pretty full day.
I think, yes, you are looking at a pretty full day. Even though it's just two rides, you've got the droid builder, the lightsaber builder, the food. You can go around scanning droids and researching, decoding messages and, you know, taking pictures by the X-Wing and the A-Wing and the TIE Echelon. There's, a whole ton you're going to be able to do. So will you need... more than one day? Yeah. If you want to do everything, but it's like Grand Theft Auto. Who does everything? Who finds every Easter egg? Like, I think there's a lot there, but I think you'd be fine with one day.
Okay. Was there any mention of like fast passes? They're going to use that system in there, or?
Yeah, there will be fast passes on the rides.
Okay.
You know, they had designated different start points for the fast pass.
Gotcha. And just like if you're one of those people that I just can't be bothered with the lines and going on the rides, like is there like tons of stuff just to walk around and soak up that way?
Yeah, you could just hang out and enjoy the atmosphere. Totally.
Okay. Hawes Burkhart, who we did the solo reaction with at the Scum and Villainy, last year, he wants to know, from the Blue Harvest podcast, of course, he wants to know, was there any information about how handicapped park attendees will access the rides and other stuff at the park?
I didn't see many steps. I don't know if that's what he means. Almost everything is a ramp. I think most things, a little bit, actually there are steps like in the town square, There are also ramps that go up. So I think that they are definitely thinking about all that. And also, hey, man, one benefit is you got to figure they're building for droids, too. So if R2-D2 can get up there, I think you can get up in your wheelchair or your device. So a lot of it is already built. It's already wheel-friendly.
The no Jabba's Palace type stair incidences there.
No.
There was early rumors that there was going to be droids just going around the park that were kind of maybe not remote, but actually kind of just knew what they were doing. Did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, they're going to be droids just rolling around, hanging out.
And are they
scan them?
Are they
talk to them?
Are they remote controlled, or are they sort of like Zumbas? Or?
I don't think they're like Zumbas. I think they're probably remote controlled. I think somebody's probably keeping an eye on them.
Man, how do you get a job doing that?
Ask Daniel Kennedy.
I don't know if he's that connected at the Disney parks, but
well, he's super connected. He works for Lucasfilm and crossed paths with him a bunch of times. With like we were talking, he was like, "Oh yeah, I remember when your kids came up to Lucasfilm. I took a trip up to San Francisco. I was there in another story. Thought I would stop by and say hello to my friends at Lucasfilm. Little professional, friendly visit." You know, chit chat a little about work and then maybe just see the facilities and, you know, meet and greet each other. And they said, "Do you bring your wife and kids?" And Chopper from Rebels rolled out, was rolling around, extended his little clipper hand and got a nice picture of my son, you know, just totally blown away by this droid beeping and talking to him and touching him and that he could touch, you know. And the dude, there was a dude I noticed standing off on the side in the lobby, just hands behind his back. He had the controller. He was piloting this thing from behind his back.
Really?
Yeah. To keep the remote control hidden, to maintain the illusion. And this chopper was rolling around doing tricks and talking to the kids. And they had no idea that there was somebody, you know, 10, 15 feet away who was controlling it. And I only knew because I, you know.
Because I was
looking for it.
Because you're a journalist.
Well, I was like, yeah, what is this thing? Is this thing alive? But so when I say ask him, I mean it. Like he actually controls a droid. So
he's a good man.
I believe he works in events.
He does. Mm-hmm. Joshua Chapman would like to know, after the articles, there have been lots of jokes and mock-ups of the Falcon surrounded by crowds and the like. Does it look like the park has a particular way of managing crowds to keep the illusion of Star Wars World in certain places? Perhaps a cap on people in certain places, even the large open-air ones?
They're going to have to manage people in some way. They're already doing the reservations thing, and I think, yes, without question, I think they do this in the park already. Like, you know, if it gets really crowded on certain holidays, they say that's it. They block things off. That's too much.
This is where they're going to have to, like, I know they're going to have to come up rules with me. Once I get a seat in that bar, I'm not getting up. That's it. Like, I'm staying in the Star Wars bar and, like, that's I'm going to be – that's it. That's my ride. So that's what I'm worried about, that, like, that bar, people are just going to go in and it's like once you get a seat there, it's like I'm not getting out. They need maybe a reservation, like an hour. They need a fast pass for the seats.
I do believe you're right. They are going to have some challenges with all that. No question.
And then our final question was from Brittany Brown down in San Diego. And again, it's the same question. how does he think Disney will manage crowds? Also, how do you feel about the park opening in phases?
I was like, oh, well, that's not great. But I also think, I don't know if this is part of the intent or not, but, oh, like in this case, yeah, you open it in phases. That also is a form of crowd control, isn't it? Because I've heard from quite a few people who go, okay, I'll wait till the whole thing is open. And that at least it kind of stretches out that rush to go. So for the people who actually have to just see it at the start, okay.
And then the rest of the people will go, okay, it's, I have actually extra whatever it is, 9 months or something that I can wait and I'll go later. And so I think it, I don't, again, I don't know if this is intent or whether just, well, that ride's not finished, but it does manage to, I think, serve as a kind of crowd control.
Yeah. Now, I guess we, you know, we normally at the end of these podcasts, we ask people what they're most excited for in Star Wars. But for this one, Anthony, what are you most excited to go check out in Galaxy's Edge once it's fully operational?
I want to try that blue milk, man. I want that. That we didn't get to taste that, and I want to try that. And I love that the Scott Trowbridge is like the the creative director of the whole. He's like the head of the Galaxy's Edge Imagineering development. He said, you know, we thought about this a lot. Everybody wants a blue milk, but do they?
Yeah, right.
But do they want to drink a tall glass of milk in the middle of August in a swamp in Florida or scorching Anaheim in Southern California? Not so sure. Not so sure they want that. So it's actually kind of a non-dairy smoothie that's made out of like vegetable dairy, like so like a almond milk or like a rice milk, sweetened, add some flavors to it, like a berry flavor and a melon flavor. So it's not just a blueberry milkshake, but it's like a little bit exotic, but sweet and refreshing rather than, whew, now I've got gastrointestinal problems from that huge that huge pint of milk that I just guzzled. So, but I'm interested to try that, and I'm also curious if anything can be mixed with it. You know, like the galactic version of a White Russian. Mm-hmm. You know, careful, man. There's a beverage here. You know,
the dude. I'm interested, before I let you go, Anthony, the article, you know, there was a big rollout at midnight Eastern time for this a couple of weeks ago. And it wasn't an exclusive Star Wars article like, you know, your EW movie ones are. But compared to a movie or maybe, you know, a cartoon, you know, article, what was the interest like with clicks?
With the crowd, with the audience, oh, pretty huge interest. You know, I'd say pretty huge.
Is it film level interest? You know, yeah. Film level interest.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Pretty high.
Well, that is that is like good, but I have to say I'm surprised by that. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was pretty. It was like. Was it a little bit less? Maybe, but not by much.
Hmm.
Interest was pretty intense.
Well, that's Star Wars for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, Anthony, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I know all the listeners enjoy it, and I certainly do. So thank you so much, and I guess, how long until I'm texting you to come back on the show when you've got a sweet cover story coming up, Resnikan?
We'll probably want to talk around Celebration or something. I mean, we have a cover story. That's going to be a little while, but there'll be plenty more to talk about probably in another month.
Nice. And you're heading over?
To Celebration, of course.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well. Yeah. Very much look forward to seeing you out there, buddy. And where can the good people of the internet track down your endeavors?
They can see me on Twitter at Resnikan and over at EW.com.
What about your radio show?
That's on SiriusXM. It's called Behind the Scenes. Airs on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific, and then repeats a couple times throughout the week.
Okay, what channel is that on?
Sirius, channel 105. It's the EW channel.
Excellent. Bresnikan. He has become a DJ. He's the latest cut from a Max Rebo. That would be the best. Well, Anthony, thanks so much for your time, man. I so appreciate it.
My pleasure. Always good to chat with you.
And may that force be with you.
You too.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed that really fun chat with our buddy Anthony Bresnikan, the Brez, the bestest of dudes. And if you enjoyed this episode, let the Bresnikan know on Twitter at Bresnikan. And while you're at it, let your followers know as well. Pod it forward. A little vouch for a podcast can go a long way for getting us new listeners. And that's what keeps independently produced podcasts like Steel Wars living and breathing. I am so excited about Star Wars Celebration. So very excited. Our live show is sold out. Unfortunately, we couldn't find anywhere a bit bigger. We've got a decent sized venue, mind you. But yeah, I would have liked to have fit in a few more people. I know some people that weren't on the Patreon missed out, but we did what we could. We did what we could. What you don't want to miss out on, sweet segue, is our three new prints made especially to celebrate Celebration. We have got the Steel Wars May That Force Be With You logo t-shirt in hopefully episode 9 colored blue. We have got the Jump Mall combining a bit of Chicago basketball imagery with the Sith Apprentice himself from episode 1, and one I hope makes a lot of sense come Star Wars Celebration, that we get to see the man himself. It is the Rick McCullum Social Club. I'm very proud of that one. And dear God, I've never seen Rick McCullum in real life, so I hope he'll be at that Star Wars Episode 1 panel. I also hope, maybe more than anything, that I spot him late one night and I get a Rick McCullum story. So cool. But those t-shirts are up for pre-order now. You save a couple bucks on the pre-order if you order before the Monday before Celebration. And if you are going to Celebration, just put the coupon code MEETUP in the coupon code thing, and that will get rid of the shipping, and I'll just bring your t-shirts to Chicago, and we can meet up somewhere through the con. It's not hard. And I'll give you a package. So just a good way to get shipping out of the way. And then you'll also have your tees to wear at Chicago, which is, it is thrilling to see people wear the t-shirts. I love making up the prints and the parody prints and all that. And it's cool when I see people rocking them. It's a real treat. I'm going to leave it there so I can get this up, and then I've got to get two Patreon shows up in the next 24 hours, a new Q&A and a new Star Wars Year by Podcast with Horst Burkhart, both going up. So I think that's almost 2 hours of extra listening combined for patrons in the next day. So gotta love that content, you guys. And thanks so much for all your support of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. As I say all the time, it's one of my life's true pleasures to get to make it for you. Thanks again to Entertainment Weekly's Anthony Bresnikan. You're the best dude. And may that force be with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.